This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Welcome to a Men in Blazers MLS Cup pod special. MLS turns 20 years of age this season, having witnessed much of DC United's inaugural campaign at the cavernous RFK, and fully aware just how far, how fast the league has come in an incredibly short period of time. MLS has celebrated the end of its second decade in remarkable style. This season's playoffs have been a fantastically frenzied spectacle. Last-minute goals, desperate comeback attempts, posts hit, never-say-die football, all played out amidst phenomenal atmosphere by characters on par with any you can find in a Raymond Chandler novel. Ahead of Sunday's final, which the Columbus Crew will host the Portland Timbers, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN, we've invited two of the gents who've captured the spirit of both sides onto the show. Courage. Our first guest on this MLS Cup Final pod special has been a defensive linchpin for 11 seasons, first with his home state Colorado Rapids, then with my mate Kyle Beckerman at Real Salt Lake, where he won MLS Cup in 2009, and this season he's dominated for the Western Conference champion Portland Timbers. His hulking 6'2" frame, his unrelenting tenacity in the tackle, and of course, a beard with its own ecosystem have combined to make him one of the league's most imposing figures. We welcome to the pod a player with more than 300 MLS appearances and a man for whom manscaping is an anathema, the one and only Mr. Nat Borchers.
Oh, thanks so much for that introduction, Roger. That was a heck of one, man. I'm very happy to be on the show with you guys.
Oh, I adore watching you play, Nat. I absolutely do. I've watched you all season. I mean, you arrived in Portland December 2014. It is a delirious soccer city. To me, it's one of the football world's must-travel-to destinations, up there with Dortmund and Crystal Palace. Can you describe what's it been like to experience Portland and the football culture there as a player?
Oh, man, it's been absolutely insane, to be honest with you. You know, going from Salt Lake City, you know, where we've got a pretty good football culture over there, you know, it's just in a different gear over here. They signed me, and I felt like I was a rock star, you know, when I came here, and never received such good treatment or, you know, been so loved by a group of fans before. So it's been really special.
I imagine that it's one of the few cities in the United States where you can have little anonymity as an MLS player.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. But the good thing about it, and Ridgie says this all the time because he's had his experience in England.
The iconic, yeah. Liam Ridgewell, Ridgie.
Ridgie, yeah. So yeah, the fans here, they're friendly, but they're not going to bother you when you're out to dinner.
I mean, I'm surprised they're not in your face because you guys have had quite the season. 2 months ago. And I'm sure you've blocked out this horrible truth. You've repressed these memories, Nat. Portland were on the brink of missing out on the playoffs completely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, just about a month and a half ago, we were on the outside looking in. And, you know, we were, you know, I think everybody outside of our locker room kind of thought, you know, what's going to happen if they don't make the playoffs? You know, or they're going to have to change the team up. You know, are they going to get rid of the gaffer? You know, what's going to happen? But, you know, we stuck together. We had some good performances, and we made it to the MLS Cup.
I mean, can you talk about step by step the transformation? What has happened to you guys over the last 80 days to turn you into potential champions?
It started probably with moving, you know, one of our best midfield players from the outside wing to the central midfield, and now he plays as a box to box midfielder. And he's just been tremendous.
You're talking about the finest U.S. international ever born in Monrovia, Liberia, Mr. Darlington Nagbe.
You are correct, Mr. Darlington Nagbe. He's been incredible for us. You know, he puts in the work both sides of the ball. You can give him a pass, and he's under pressure, you know, with five guys on his back, and he's able to turn and get out of it. You know? So he's been tremendous for us. I think that was the first step, And then, you know, the rest of it is kind of falling into place. We already had a good, I think, defensive spine of the team. And, you know, then now we can score, you know, I think, goals a little bit more easily than we had before. And that's really put us on a good path.
I mean, this is a team that who appear to have forged their true identity in the playoffs. You've survived an almost infinite penalty shootout with Kansas City. You won on the road in Vancouver. And then you weathered key injuries to punch out young, effervescent Dallas. There's no such thing as playoff football in the English Premier League. It's a very American phenomenon. Can you explain to me the exact moment when you looked around your locker room and realised that this team had what it takes to go all the way?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Roger. You know, I felt that way the first day I showed up to training. And, you know, I had an opportunity to choose which team I was traded to. And you know, I was able to choose Portland because I felt like it was a team that was built to win. It had all the pieces in place. You know, it was a hungry young coach, Caleb Porter, and I felt like, you know, we had everything that we needed. We just needed maybe a little bit more belief in ourselves. And you know, it came a little bit later than it did sooner, but here we are.
I mean, what a series you had in the Western Conference Championship. The first leg, you're facing a superb young Dallas team. You scramble home a 90th minute goal to make it 3-1. You did all the hard work. You stabbed the ball home from close range like a ginger Jamie Vardy. But in the second leg, last weekend, Dallas mounted a frenzied comeback. And by the end, you were desperately clinging on. I mean, at the death, Timbers had a one-goal lead, but Dallas's mighty Blas Perez wriggled free right in front of goal. He pulled back his leg, dreaming of glory and destruction. But then, out of nowhere, comes your leg of wonder at full stretch to block the shot like Dikembe Mutombo in cleats and save the day. That block, in that moment, do you feel it? That you're executing an amazing, game-changing play? Or are you just locked in and in the zone and you don't think about it at the time?
Well, I've got goosebumps. I think that in that situation, when you've got a striker that's knocking on the door and he's about to score, as a defender, you just kind of close your eyes and you just do whatever you can. And somehow, I was able to keep that ball out of the net. And, you know, we were able to go back down the field and score a goal on the next play, and we're through.
But when you look at it on video afterwards, do you look at that and say, that was an extraordinary moment by me, Nat Borchers? Or do you look at it like it's somebody else, a giant, red-headed monster? Does it feel like an out-of-body thing when you watch it retrospectively? Or are you just like, yeah, of course I did that, I'm Nat Borchers?
No, I mean, I think I was pretty fortunate to be in the right spot at the right time there, for sure. But to be honest with you, I thought that there was a few other key moments in the game that were just as big for us to be able to get through that game. Because you're right, Dallas came at us the last 20 minutes of that game, and we bent, but we didn't break, fortunately.
I want to talk about your career, Nat. I hope this is not offensive, but when I read about it, I see a gentleman who's had a slow burn. You were initially undrafted. You caught on in MLS by playing in the Colorado Rapids development system. And then after forcing your way into MLS, you decided to head to Europe, 2006. And when we think about Americans abroad, we tend to think Premier League, maybe we think Ligue 1 in France, we think Bundesliga. You went to one of my favorite named teams in the Tippeligaen in Norway.
They're called Odd Grenland.
Odd. I want to know odd does not come to mind for many of us in America. How did that happen? And what was that experience like for you?
Well, I'd always wanted to play soccer abroad. And it was the opportunity came in our offseason. I went over and I trained with this club. My agent had a relationship with them. I didn't expect to get signed. I just wanted to get the experience. And they ended up liking me, and they ended up paying my transfer fee, and I ended up playing 2 years in southern Norway, where I was fighting 6 foot snowdrift just to get to training.
I mean, this place, Skien, the birthplace of Henrik Ibsen. It's actually, I think it's the logging capital of Norway. You seem to prosper in logging capitals now. I'm seeing a pattern here. How was it for you as a young American, somewhat innocently trying to learn their trade in Europe?
Oh, it was extremely difficult. I mean, the culture was completely different from what I was used to. I had to learn a new language. The football was just tremendously different. But it taught me a lot about the tactical side of the game. I learned a lot about myself as a player and being more professional. Unfortunately, we were relegated the second year I was there. But I really felt like I learned a lot in that stop.
Can you put that into words for me, Nat? Because I'm interested. What lessons about football or life did you learn that you couldn't have learned in the United States by spending that time in your career in Odd?
I feel like a player like myself in that league was not as special as I am in MLS. That's something I realized. I feel like, I showed up with my lunch pail, my work boots, went to battle every day. But I think there was a lot of players who were like that, and I think you at MLS, there are fewer players like me and more players, perhaps that are more special in terms of their athletic talents and their ability to score goals.
Vikings are a dime a dozen in Norway. Nat, is that what you say? You came back to MLS and you became a pillar of the successful Real Salt Lake team before you moved to Portland last December. You are right now the face of MLS. And it's amazing to me, thinking through your career, the fact you've been more MLS seasons, 11, with Nat Borchers playing than without Nat Borchers. What's the biggest difference you've experienced over the years you've plied your trade in America's Soccer League?
Well, I think that the league has gotten infinitely better in so many different aspects, in terms of the play, in terms of developing our younger players and getting them from being developmental players that don't see the pitch to being full-on, starting 11 type of players. I think that the organization with the clubs has gotten better. We used to have to fight just to get lunches after training. Now that's the norm for clubs here.
I'm interested in your experience in another regard. I mean, I'm fascinated about the role you play off the ball as a leader. It's the great intangible in football. It's oft talked about, experience, but it's little understood. I mean, you're 34 years of age. You've played 11 seasons of MLS football. You helped guide Real Salt Lake to 7 straight playoff appearances. You won MLS Cup in 2009. How is leadership exerted in football? Do you give speeches in the locker room? Did you quietly whisper pointers to the young ones around the lunch table? Or do you read from your forthcoming autobiography on the team bus?
Well, I think it's a great question because you can't quantify. We're obsessed with statistics in America, and you can't quantify leadership. I think a lot of it just depends on the group. I think with this group, we've got a decent amount of veterans in our locker room, so you don't really need to say much. I think leading by example is important, and I think that treating your teammates, as human beings and being interested in their life outside of soccer is very important because, you gain trust that way. And you show interest in their lives and it's reciprocated.
We've got to talk about your beard now, Nat. I mean, for those who have not seen it, how would you describe Nat Borch's beard?
That's my favorite topic, Roger. It's something it started a couple of years ago and it's grown into something that I just can't stop, I would say. It's pretty gnarly, it's pretty wild, and pretty unkempt, and it's just kind of a part of who I am now.
I mean, you look like, for those who haven't seen it, Nat looks like David Letterman if he had a bastard wilding offspring with Tormund Giantsbane. I mean, close your eyes, think Alexi Lalas in full-on desert island survivalist mode if he'd been left on his own for 20 years with a volleyball. I mean, your story is well known. You began growing this gorgeous, monstrous, life of its own ginger beard during the 2013 MLS Cup playoffs. Real Salt Lake suddenly knocked out by Kansas City, and you made the decision to keep the beard until you finally won another MLS Cup. Do you wake up every morning, Nat, stroke that beard, and be reminded of your hunger to win the trophy?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'm just happy that my wife has tolerated it for the last couple of years, because it's, I wake up in the morning and it's pretty wild. It takes me about 10 minutes just to comb it out to make sure it's in the right place. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, as long as she's happy with it, see how long it lasts.
I've got to think, sporting a large ginger beard in a city like Portland, that must be like being a brown envelope stuffed full of used dollars at a FIFA meeting in terms of drawing the eye of all those around you. All of our listeners, they wanted to know the same thing. They wanted to know, Nat, what is your beard's endgame? A GFOP at Jay Boria asked, if you win MLS Cup, Nat Borchers, will you have your teammates cut off the beard like when NBA teams cut down the net?
Oh, man, I mean, I don't see why not. The guys want to do it. I think that that's what's going to have to be done. But, you know, who knows? Maybe the fans are going to say no. Maybe it's just a relic of the Portland Timbers, and it's just got to be kept and, you know, for the next season.
Get Timber Jerry involved. I've always wanted to see him do a circumcision. This may be the closest thing we ever get to making that a reality. Nat, you are 34. You could play on until your Brad Friedel age. But there's not many top-class 35, 36-year-old defenders in football. How much do you think about the end of your career, your own retirement?
Oh, I think about it all the time, for sure. I think that you have to have a plan B when you're a professional soccer player, professional footballer. I've got a lot of interest outside of soccer, and you know, I think that... I'm excited about whatever turn, whenever that happens.
I mean, you are a real estate mogul in the Utah area, I believe. But can you talk about this final Sunday and what it means to you to be within touching distance of the Cup at this stage of your career?
Definitely, as you look back on your career, you realize there's not too many moments, special moments like this to win a Cup. And I think the situation is even more special because it's the Portland Timbers, and we've never been here, and this city hasn't won a major soccer trophy yet at any level. And I think that that's what's most exciting, I think, for me, is for us to be able to potentially win a cup, bring it back to Portland, and to see the fans go crazy.
I mean, I've been to Portland. I've seen an average... everyday regular season game in Portland, and it honestly felt like a World Cup final. Can you just shut your eyes for 1 second and think about what the scenes could be like in the city of Portland, dare I say it, if you win MLS Cup on Sunday?
For, like you said, even a preseason game for us is like a World Cup final. The atmosphere is so electric. I would just see everybody coming out of the woodwork here and giving us a nice little celebration here in Portland.
Oh, Timber Jerry, we may be able to launch his bid for the presidency in 2006 on the back of that victory. God willing. Nat, you are a remarkable bloke. We wish you and your teammates every success on Sunday. Please send our finest to my gents Caleb Porter and Merritt Paulson, and most importantly of all, to the great, great Timber Jerry.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on, Roger. I appreciate it.
Our next guest represents the Columbus Crew on this MLS Cup pod special. A charismatic gent whose 22 goals made him the regular season's joint leading marksman. He carried that knack for big goals into the playoffs, scoring the series deciders in the conference semi-finals against Montreal and the conference finals against the New York Red Bulls. But this 31-year-old's footballing odyssey begins long before he touched down in his current home of Columbus. As a child, he played pickup games on the war-torn streets of Sierra Leone before moving to California as a teenager and eventually finding a way to get to England to ply his trade in the Premier League. We welcome to the pod a man who loves Chipotle in the same way we love pie, the one and only Mr. Kai Kamara.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, Kai, I adored watching you play throughout the series against the Red Bulls. It was frenzied, it was a bit bonkers. There were some outstanding performances. Will Trapp, Luis Robles, you, always you. I mean, the New York Red Bulls, they would not say die. There was a touch of the Glenn Close fatal attractions about them. I want to relive the emotion of this series with you. Let's go back to the beginning. We're in Columbus, and your team score 9 seconds, 9 seconds into a semi-final, straight from the kickoff, from a set play, a kickoff set play.
Great play, Colin, I have to say it right there, because, you know, we lined up, we were coming out of the locker rooms, dressing room, as you would say, coming out of there, and it was all about setting the tone of the game. We said, let's set the tone, let's get the fans behind us, but we didn't know it was going to come the first 10 seconds of the game.
But on this show, Kai, we believe it's possible to score too early, for a team to score too early, draw false confidence, and for the other team to actually end up, if they're playing Newcastle, to end up scoring 4 or 5 without repeat. You score 9 seconds into a game. What goes through your mind? Did you guys say to yourself, this is unbelievable, nothing can go wrong now? Or does part of you say, hang on, lads, you know what, a minute, we've got to calm ourselves, adrenaline pumping, we could have scored too early?
To me, or, you know, everybody else, I feel like we're feeling, this is amazing. Can we get another one again really early? If you can score a goal like that, the way I look at it is, we're definitely ready. We're coming out the gates. We're ready. We're ready to go. And getting that early goal was looking at the next one. Okay, there's more goals in this game. We can definitely get some more goals. And obviously, that one happened really early. And the next one didn't happen to the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, scored by a very fine-looking young man, yourself, from Breckshay range, close up. You then go to New York. New York, find a way. It takes them a while to crack you guys. And just before the final whistle, they score a first, and then deep into injury time, I think 5 minutes, BWP, Bradley Wright Phillips, one of several Wrights and Phillips, whatever, they've chucked them all on. He rifles the ball off the post, and who is it on the goal line to mop things up, Kai?
I'm just trying to improve my defensive game, because supposedly on FIFA, my defensive game is like a 30 rating, so I've been in the right place at the right time.
You were so casual the way you cleared off the line. It was remarkable when I watched it. I was like, what goes through your mind when that happens? And also, in retrospect, when you look at it in the hours after, what goes through your mind then?
How did I end up in that position? Obviously, when I saw Wright Phillips getting the touch on the ball, I saw it going. So I was like, don't kick it into your own net. So I had to take my time into collecting the ball, getting the touch across the post. I could have kicked the ball back upfield, but I decided to kick it out to, you know, the corner kick, which is not a good thing to just give a corner up. But I was at the right place, and don't have spaghetti legs. That's all.
Well, you won. You are through. MLS Cup final now awaits. You host Portland 4 p.m. Sunday. I couldn't be more excited for you as a team, Kai, because I've been to Columbus and there's a fantastic soccer culture that is deeply embedded in soccer tradition in that city and in that state. But I couldn't be more excited for you personally, because we hear about many players who struggle to make it through to the professional game. But I've got to say, you put their struggles into perspective. You grew up in war-scarred Sierra Leone, a nation torn apart by civil war, violence, child soldiers. You recently told CNN in a beautiful interview, I still have nightmares of me just running, me never settled in one place. There's always something happening. There's always people chasing us.
Yeah, it's a blessing, you know, to be honest with you. It's a blessing to just be here today. Coming from Sierra Leone and moving to the U.S. at the age of 16 and going to school, getting drafted, playing in the MLS, moving from MLS, going to play in England for a little bit, coming back to the MLS, it's just been a blessing. You know, there's nothing else. It's a dream, you know, a dream come true. I mean, I never would have thought I would have been here today to say,
I mean, when you say a lot of footballers say, I never thought I would be there. But when you read what you have witnessed the darkness, Kai.
Yes.
You have witnessed death. You have seen executions. You have seen before your eyes things that most of us could never even mentally picture.
Yeah, and that's what you never want to, you know, you don't want to wish that on anyone. Mostly, you know, kids growing up in war-torn countries and anything like that. Those are the people you have to think about and think about things that they've seen and things that can scare you for life. So for me, being able to put those things into positive and pushing me to go forward. You know, I'm full of smiles all the time, you know, social media, you know, anything that I do, I'm full of smiles. But yes, there's a lot of, you know, things that happen as a kid And, you know, I just cherish it right now and just, you know, use that to make me a better person.
Football-wise, in the US, we're obsessed with youth development for good reason.
Yes.
But what's amazing to me is that you grew up playing street ball. You didn't really start playing organized football until you're how old?
Yeah, I started pretty late. Basically, if I moved into the US at 16, I didn't start until I was 17 in high school. That's when I started actually playing.
But before then, you grew up. Describe kind of the street ball that you grew up with in Sierra Leone.
Just Sierra Leone, just African street ball. Just put, you know, two rocks on one side or a trash can or something on as a goal. And just the way you play, five a side, six, seven. That's just it, just from dusk till dawn after school.
It's what we need more of in the US, more rocks, yes. More trash cans,
yes.
Football.
Yes, and street football, yeah. Just get everybody a little bit more tougher.
You broke through with Columbus.
Yep.
But the goals didn't come, just five.
Five goals in 2 years.
Look at you laughing. I think at the worst things, Kai Kamara, that's how you deal with this pain. You began to bounce around the league. I mean, a lot is discussed about the mentality of the American professional. Do you feel you were mentally stronger than all those around you on the field, knowing that you've had to struggle just to get to America in the first place?
Yeah, I feel like I'm one of the elites when it comes to that, you know, mentally, because of what I've been through as a kid does help me, you know, my family, my background does definitely help me to go forward day by day. And but I try to, you know, move that along to, you know, my friends and family, all people that grew up around here that I do know, you know, I try to motivate them in that way and say, listen, you're going through this, but there's definitely worse things that can happen.
And you know those worse things. You absolutely do. But it was at Sporting Kansas City that you defined yourself with 38 goals in 2.5 seasons. You became a fan favorite. I mean, you delighted.
It's the heart-shaped hand signal that I do. That's all. It was in the goals.
Oh, but you do your heart-shaped hand signal. You tweet fans for snowball fights. You tweet them to join you for burritos. I mean, I look at you. There's such a special relationship between you on the field and you off the field. From a distance, Kai, it seems that the better you play, the more the fans love you. The more the fans love you, the better you play. It's like a reciprocal relationship.
Yes, I really, when I feel connected with the people around me, the fans around me, my teammate, it does make me a better person, you know, because, again, from all the dark past that I've had, I just want to be happy. And when I'm happy, I'm at, you know, at my best. And playing soccer, football, that's the best thing that I want to do. So when I'm happy doing that, then, I mean, there's no limit to it. You just have to enjoy yourself.
Your legend grew. You moved on to England. On loan at first with Norwich City. You scored once in 11 games.
There we go.
I've got to tell you, Kai, it was an awful, awful goal. It was in a win against Everton Football Club.
Oh, yeah, that team.
You then went to Middlesbrough. There's not many players who played MLS, Premier League and Championship level football. I'm interested. Can you talk about the differences between the three leagues in terms of physicality, speed of play? How big a gap is there between MLS, Premier League, Championship football in England?
Yeah, actually, to start, the Premier League to me is the best league in the world. And starting in the MLS to play here, it was really good. I always saw players leaving the MLS and went to England to play. So then I started thinking maybe I can go out there and train. So just before I went to Norwich, I was training with Stoke City. And when I saw that, I saw the level, I was like, oh yeah, I think I can do this. I can come out here and play. And just a month later, I was out there with Norwich. And I loved it. I loved it every single minute of it. I mean, I'm in that dressing room every day, and guys just like, why are you smiling so much? I said, because you guys just don't know what this means to actually be here playing in the Premier League, where I wake up every Saturday mornings to watch the games. You know, so to me, it felt so much more to be there to watch these games and to play there. And with that itch, that's what made me make the transition to go back and stay in England for a bit.
I mean, you're in Middlesbrough. Injuries ultimately made your time there somewhat of a struggle.
Yes.
How hard is it for a pro when you've established yourself in England? How hard is that decision? It's perceived to be the pinnacle for world football. You're on the cusp of big money with Middlesbrough. How hard is it for you to process personally that decision about should I stay, should I go, should I grind it out in the Championship, should I return to MLS?
Yeah, it was a tough decision, and I loved it in Middlesbrough, and things were going well in the beginning when I was there. Tony Mowbray was the coach, believed in me, brought me in, giving me a chance to play. And obviously, yes, I got injured, but I got back from injury and I felt like everything was 100% and I was ready to go. and I've learned so much just the amount of time that I had off the field from the game, and I just wanted to get back on the field just so I can produce for the club, but that never happened, and I didn't want to waste, you know, the prime of my career. So I said, you know, the league that where I started, it would be definitely be the best place, because I had other clubs interested in me in England, in Italy, and wanted me to go in France and wanted me to go there, but I just said, you know, it was best to come back in the MLS and continue playing.
Why can't?
There was a lot of players when I was in England asking me, when I was in Norwich, when I was in Middlesbrough, or just around the league, sending me messages asking how can they play in the MLS. And I said, well, if the league is growing that much, why should I be going, you know, anywhere else when I can just come back and be part of it?
Oh, Stevie G had your cell phone number. You end up back in Columbus and you have a massive, massive regular season, 22 goals, tied for the league regular season best. How does that, like, how does that suddenly just happen in a striker's career, age 31? I mean, we're watching right now Jamie Vardy have a career kind of breakout year with Leicester. How does it just happen, age 31, Kai? How do you understand that?
Actually, it's, if you look around, a lot of African players, we bloom kind of late. And that's because of what I just mentioned earlier, not starting until age 17. It takes a while. You know, if you start in an academy, it does help you develop as a player. But if you don't start in an academy, you always have a lot of time to learn. And for me, I felt like I didn't start learning football really until I started playing professionally. So which is just 9 years of playing professionally.
So essentially, you are in a football professional's career equivalent. You're really just 23, 24. If you play to Brad Friedel ages, you're going to burn up this league for many years to come.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of making a transition to be a goalkeeper later on. So that might be good.
You've scored for fun this season in MLS, but you didn't get voted onto the All-Star team by the fans, which is packed with the league's buzzy European stars. Does that piss you off? Because you're not on the billboard. You're not getting recognized in that way.
Yeah, it did. It did. I tweeted about it, and that's how I felt, and that's what I said. You know, if you work so hard throughout the years, I feel like you should definitely get credit. There's been other years that I felt like I should have been part of the All-Star team. That didn't happen. But then definitely this year, being the position where I was and the amount of goals that I had, I definitely thought, you know, I should have been listed in the top, in the best 11 for the All-Star team. And it didn't happen early. But later on, I got added to the All-Star team, so I still get credit for saying I was an MLS All-Star.
And you tell me that you're vindicated now because you're on the most important All-Star team.
Yeah, definitely. Just being part of the MLS Cup final, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you've played for 9 seasons in MLS. What's the biggest change that you've seen as a player? I mean, there obviously are these incredible names, the Kakas, the Lamps, the Stevie Gs, the Drogbas, who you defeated. His Montreal impact. But what for you as a player is the biggest difference in that 9-season span?
The growth of the league. Since 2006 to now, the league has grown so much, and the recognition of MLS around the world, it's amazing. A lot of credit to these guys coming into the league and really helping that. But then a lot of credit to us, the American players, growing up around here and playing in college level and coming from college, getting drafted and getting into the league and making a name for yourself and being part of the U.S. national team or any national team around. It's been a lot of work. But then, you know, some guys like you mentioned, like the Kaká, Jovinko, and those guys come into this league and they really work hard, you know, on and off the field. They've worked out to actually help, you know, brand this league. And so there's a lot of respect to them. But MLS has really, really improved in the past years.
Talking about great foreign players, great foreign teams, your dog, Kai.
Chelsea.
We've got to talk about your dog. What's her name?
Chelsea. Chelsea the dog. Chelsea the dog 23 on Twitter. Don't make sure you follow her.
She's got her own Twitter handle.
She does have a Twitter
handle. When I read about Chelsea the dog, I thought to myself, oh my God, Kai Kamara, how much does this man love football? It's his job, but he still makes time to be a fan.
Yes, Chelsea the dog was actually on the front page newspaper in Middlesbrough when we got there, because we went from Kansas City to Middlesbrough, and she was all over with me. But I picked her up from the pond, adopted her, and she's amazing. I mean, she's my partner off season to go running. She's getting a bit old now, 5, really lazy. But named her after
like
Chelsea.
John Terry. She lost the pace of it.
Named it after Chelsea FC, obviously. And yeah.
Did you tell Didier Drogba about your dog when you knocked his Montreal Impact out of the MLS
playoffs? I was too nervous talking to Drogba, I got to be honest. He's a legend. You know, in Africa, we, you know, kind of worship this guy. I was talking to him on the field. He wanted to speak to me off the field. He pulled me on the side. We spoke after the game for about 20 minutes, you know, talked to me about national team and Africa, because, you know, I took a step back from my national team and he told me to get back
Sierra
on the
Leone.
Team. Yeah, he was trying to motivate me to get back on the team. And, you know, we talked about a few more things and it was just amazing for him to take that time to say, hey, come here, let's talk about this. So there's a lot of things I wanted to tell him, but I was, you know, kind of like starstruck a bit.
You were starstruck.
Yes.
Beating Didier Drogba after beating his team.
Didn't matter, it's Didier Drogba.
You are a remarkable and humble and beautiful bloke. You've played for a decade. I read you still suffer from nerves before big games.
I dance a lot to try to settle that.
You've got a pre-game ritual. As a Muslim, you recite the opening verses of the Quran to your boots to bless them before kissing them for good luck. Tell me, what are you going to be praying for ahead of this MLS Cup final on Sunday, Kate?
Win the trophy, really. But no, I don't want to change anything. Everything that I've done throughout the years or throughout my years of playing, that's going to be the same thing. Yes, I read the Fatiha before the game, and that's for protection. It's not for anything saying, make me win this game. No, it's just for protection. I do that. But just, you know, prepare the same way I've prepared for every game, and kiss my boots the same way I've kissed my boots every game. And just be ready for the game. It's going to be great because we're going to be at home. That's the best thing about it.
I've got to ask you last. One of my favorite moments from the MLS playoffs. There's been many great ones. But your decisive goal in overtime. 111th minute, I think it was, to eliminate Montreal Impact and the great Didier Drogba. Eastern Conference semi-final. You scored a sharp finish. You then ran towards the fans. They went bonkers, as they do in Columbus. And suddenly, for a second, as you approach them, seemed to me you found it almost impossible to hide the tears for a second. You're just overwhelmed by an emotion. To me, it was one of the most human sporting moments of the year, Kyle. Can you tell me, and not just that it was cool to score or help your teammates through or so any of the stuff that footballers do like to say and when they talk about these things after the fact, but what exactly went through your mind at that moment?
Yeah, it's actually it's weird that you caught that on TV, but I had the goal and came down. Obviously, the first emotion was just you're so happy. So I'm running over there really fast to the Nordeca, our supporters group, and just like so happy. And I got there, and all of my teammates got there. Then it just hit me like, wow, because I had just missed the penalty before that, and I was just like, wow, I can't believe this is actually happening to me. You know, I had a goal, missed the penalty, and then I go to score a goal in overtime. So it just hit me really hard, and I was just like, I can't believe it's happening. Yeah.
Tears.
Invisible ones. Invisible tears.
Those are the best kind, Kai Kamara. You are a poet warrior.
Thank you.
We wish you and Ethan Finlay and Will Trapp. I love watching Will Trapp. We wish you Godspeed in the final Sunday. Good luck, Kai.
Thank you very much.
What a privilege to speak with both of these gents ahead of Sunday's final. We wish them and the great footballing cities they represent the best of luck this weekend. And again, you can watch MLS Cup Final at 4 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday on ESPN.